You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar.
This episode was made possible by the support of our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Mythgreens Podcast. I'm Oren. With me today is...
Chris.
And...
Wes.
And today we are talking about magic items, but specifically magic items that are not weapons or armor, or, you know, the classics, because, like, those magic swords, they get enough glory already with, like, you know, Sting and... I realize Sting is actually the only sword I know the name of. But, you know, like, all the other ones, they got them. You know they got them. So we're not talking.
Yeah. My favorite are wands, because they do everything.
Yeah, wands are great.
Wands are the best. It's a magic item that is for all things ever.
Stirring your
potions. Doesn't that make the sonic screwdriver basically a wand?
Yeah, so actually, I was going to say that this can include tech. A lot of technology is definitely falls into the role of magic item, as long as it lets you do something that is not standard.
I was going to say, let's not forget the first Thor movie where he says, oh yes, well, what you consider magic is actually our very advanced technology.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure it's your very advanced technology that lets you shoot lightning out of your hands, Thor. Absolutely. No, but like, for example, in Star Trek, a phaser is not a magic item because everyone has phasers, right? But the transporter gun in that one episode of Deep Space Nine is absolutely a magic item. Because even though it technically works off of technology, it is doing something that you cannot normally do. It has a miraculous effect. And really the only difference between that and say the Golden Compass from the Golden Compass is that the transporter gun is a little harder to explain why everyone doesn't have
okay,
one.
Okay, so what about the self-replicating mines then?
Yeah, those are absolutely a magic item.
Okay.
I mean, they're also a huge plot contrivance, mm-hmm. right? Because they are like they are basically a way that Deep Space Nine could have them lose the station, but also keep the idea that the Dominion reinforcements coming through the wormhole is something they can't allow mm-hmm. to happen, right? So yeah, they're absolutely a magic item. They're just a bad one. you know, they're highly abusable, and there's no reason they couldn't be replicated to use a pun, and they just aren't, because you know. Because we don't mm-hmm. care.
I will say the thing about wands being the all magic magic item mm-hmm. is I want to see like more wizards that like bring 10 wands everywhere they go because like they're all optimized for like different types of spells like you know like a professional would use because I think that's what an actual professional with a tool would do, either that or buy an overpriced wand from Apple Computing and.
Yes, yeah, and get like that proprietary spell that will only work on a certain kind of wand.
Yeah.
I mean, I could be wrong, but I have a very distinct memory that at some point in Harry Potter they establish that using two wands at once makes your spell more powerful.
What?
What? You would just duct tape a roll together, right?
What?
I am positive that happens at some point. I don't know. I can't remember, so I shouldn't even have brought it up. Citation needed. So I know this is weird, but at least when I think about magic items, wands don't really enter into it because aside from the possibility of a wand being broken or lost, they don't really matter. The wand is just a thing the wizard needs to have in order to do magic. And they are basically, the role they serve in the story is that they are a thing that the characters can take away from someone to make them unable to do magic, which is important because if Harry could do magic always, all the time, it would be impossible to ever imprison him mm-hmm. anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, right? And I think that is probably the best way to do that and important. But there are some stories in which that anybody can do magic if they have the wand, and there is a specific wand MacGuffin, like Bright, for instance.
Do we have to talk about Bright?
We don't have to talk about Bright.
It can be the movie that shall not be named for the rest of this podcast.
But it is a good point that, like, when we talk about magic items, it's like the item has the magic, right? So, like, you know, if it is a wand, then the wand is magic, and feasibly anybody could use it with varying consequences.
Yeah.
Right. Or at least the wand lets you do something unusual, mm-hmm. right? Which is why I don't usually think of Harry Potter wands in this context, but, like, there is, for example, the Time Turner, which obviously there's been a lot of hay made about that, but the Time Turner does fulfill one of the big reasons to add a magic item to your setting, which is that it changes the plot
mm-hmm.
in a significant mm-hmm. way. It happens to be a way that is highly abusable, but it is certainly... it is certain that book three could not have proceeded the way that it did without the Time Turner, right? As opposed to, like, one of the things that authors forget, especially if they are getting a lot of their inspiration from video games, is that an item that gives you +5 to socializing is, like, just not a good magic item to have in fiction, because it's, like, really hard to show what that means.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, I succeed at my attempts to convince people to do things 5% more often. Even if that was, like, a real effect that you could, like, study in a lab with a double-blind focus group or whatever, it would be really hard to bring into a story.
Yeah, I would add that I agree that it definitely needs to be important to the plot. I also am a fan of magic items that serve as... kind of like, what's a good word for this? Like, maybe like a sigil or like a talisman of the character. So, like, the item mm-hmm. itself helps you do more with that character. We talk about Harry Potter a lot. The broom is a magic item that serves that purpose for Harry. And
that's
then,
like a representation of his skill in Quidditch.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if, one of my favorite book series that I read growing up in elementary school was called The Chronicles of Prydain. And that's where, like, the Book of Three, The Black Cauldron, those stories come
from. Yeah, starring Taran.
Yeah, my favorite character in that, well, actually, most of those characters all had their own kind of minor magic items, like the creature Gurgi had his enchanted wallet of food that always made food, but it didn't taste that great. And, Island Wee had her bauble that, like, only she could, like, will to create, like, to make light from it. Mm-hmm. But my favorite was the bard, who is, like, a king that got, like, was just bad at being a king. So he went to a bard school and he was kind of a terrible bard. So they gave him a harp, and the harp almost plays itself and it's beautiful music. But whenever he exaggerates the truth, a string breaks.
Right.
Oh, no. I just loved all of that throughout the story, because over time, like, and then eventually there were times where he would, like, say something outlandish and everyone would, like, look at the harp and the strings would hold and he'd be like, whoa. All right.
Yeah, I mean, so a lot of those, there is another reason to add magic items, and, you know, this can be, you can go too far with this, but just pure novelty is sometimes a reason to add magic items. Like, the one that I think of a lot is in the Dresden Files, eventually at one point in the book, in the series, Dresden makes this scale model of Chicago with, like, made out of precious metals and, like, things that the book has established before are, like, magically conductive. Mm-hmm. And then he has, like, a crystal hanging above it, and he, like, uses that to find stuff in Chicago. And in theory, it helps him find things faster, but, like, dramatically speaking, Dresden already had ways of finding things because he was literally a private investigator. So, like, you could take that thing out and... like, you could almost certainly still find ways that Dresden could locate the things he's looking for. But it's a cool thing. Like, when I read it, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, I want one of those. Where by?
Yeah, like, yeah. Can I order 5, please? get Amazon Prime that right now. But
yeah.
So like, and you can go too far with that, right? Like, you can create an endless train of magic items, and it does sometimes feel like Dresden is running a magic items warehouse. Where he just has, like, it's like, what happened to that thing from, like, 5 books ago? It's like, I don't know, it's under a pile of other magic items somewhere.
Yeah. I would like to build on that. Magic items that are just narratively convenient, which, I mean, I think we've seen a little bit of with, like, the Gurgi's Wall of the Food. It's like, now I don't have to explain mm-hmm. how the characters are always getting food all the time mm-hmm. When they're, like, traveling yeah. and in hard times. I would also like to add the Pensieve to that. I think the Pensieve mm-hmm. is, you know, it's like the flashback summoner. Mm-hmm.
It's very useful.
Yeah,
for
and
that.
It's like when you have books that are like, you know, single viewpoint, third limited, it's always from Harry's viewpoint, except for, like, you know, the beginning of the first book. There's a few scenes, I guess, in book four that are from, like, Voldemort's viewpoints or somebody else. But for the most part, it's, you know, it's all from Harry's viewpoint. But then it's, you know, time to work in, like, the backstory on the villain and all these other things. Having a device that just, like, creates a narrative framework for those flashbacks to happen. And then also lets, like, Harry observe what's happening as a separate character and think on them. You know, it's very useful.
Yeah.
It's very useful.
True. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Another important use of magic items is very often to give a character some special skill that makes them relevant to the plot or otherwise, like, more powerful than they would, you know, normally be able to. Like, for Lyra is probably my favorite example of that. I mentioned the Golden Compass earlier, or technically it is called an Elethiometer.
Elethiometer.
Yeah, because I know that. Yeah, I know what it's called, nerds. but anyway, like, Lyra, without the Elethiometer, is just not going to work as the main character of this story. Like, she is a child. She's a literal child with a bunch of adults. Like, it just wouldn't make sense for her to be taking point if she didn't have the Elethiometer, which tells her stuff and is very useful mm-hmm. for that reason. Of course, when you do that, you can go too far, and there's a lot of things about the Elethiometer, especially in the later books, where it's just like, why doesn't she just ask it the answer to the problem that they're in right now? Because it can, like, because the way the Elethiometer works is, in the first book, it's actually, like, she hasn't learned how to use it fully yet, so she, like, has to ask it a question, and then it, like, points to these symbols, and then she has to try to interpret them. But by the later books, she just, like, asks it a question, and, like, basically it just tells her the answer. And so it's like, okay, why is she only asking these questions? Why not mm-hmm. other questions? Like,
yeah, I think if we're going to have that, like, a magic item that only gives you yes or no would probably be a good restriction on that.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, if it can give complex answers, then it's gonna really... I've talked to people about this before. It's like, this is, you know, you don't want, like, a benign, all-knowing being in your story.
Yeah.
You know, it's really gonna create a hardship for you when you're trying to plot things out.
Oh, another very useful role for magic items is the Dark Temptation.
So much of that. It's great.
it's so good. Yeah. Well, I mean... Because we are talking about, like, the speculative fiction genre, and the Ring of Power is probably the original magic item of temptation from which all other temptation magical items mm-hmm. are descended.
I still think it's the best magic item ever.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Like, the whole, like, yeah. And the whole way it implements instant gratification and, like, delayed misery is good.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting to me about the Ring of Power is that it's tempting you, and it works. Like, I accept that it is tempting these people, but it's very unspecific of what it's tempting them with.
That's what makes,
like,
it cool.
I find that interesting. I don't know if another author could get away with doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe because we just associate that so much with Tolkien. But that, like, definitely gives it its own flavor, right? It's just like, you want the ring. And, like, even though it's not tempting you with anything specific, like, for the most part, the audience goes along with it and is like, yeah, I can see why you would want that. Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, it's really just a good commentary on that old adage about, like, absolute power, you know, making everything happy and wonderful.
Yeah,
I mean, like, that's the point.
That's,
it's
definitely,
like,
how that...
all those rings were made, and I'm pretty sure the books talk about some of those rings at least having some kind of specific functions. It's, like, I might be wrong. I need to be fact checked, but, like, some of the dwarf rings, like, allowed them to, like, access like certain like mineral deposits or like know where to mine and things like that. But the promise of just like this thing gives you power over all of them is just like, okay, but the characters don't really know that, right? It's just like calling to them with this abstract notion of absolute powerness.
Yeah, certainly yeah. Tolkien, to make his books mysterious, really withholds a lot of information and makes things very distant. And with the ring, like, people seem to want it because they think it'll give them power, but it's never like clear how.
Yeah.
Like, how is it going to give them power? And you know it's powerful, but the only thing you actually see it do is, you know, make people invisible, or as we later find out, kind of put them in sort of the, I don't know what it's called, the like dark realm of some kind, where it makes them more visible to ring wraiths, etc.
Yeah, the danger zone, I think, is what that's called.
Yes, I'm pretty sure. Per canon in the book, Gandalf says.
Yeah, I think
the danger zone.
Yeah,
the ring wraiths are like, welcome to the danger zone, Frodo.
One of the important things to think about when you're looking at magic items, especially ones that are like dark and evil, is the question of why can't the characters just get rid of it? And Lord of the Rings actually does a really good job of explaining this, but not in the way that it immediately seems. Because the obvious reason why they can't just get rid of it is that Sauron's minions would find it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because the ring wants to return to Sauron. Mm-hmm. But that can get a little bit contrived if you imagine, like, really, would Sauron's minions find it if I poured it in a cement block and, like, dropped it into an ocean trench? Like, would they really? Because that starts to make it sound like Sauron is all-powerful. The reason why nobody ever really asks this question is that the actual reason they can't just get rid of it is that Sauron is winning without it. Like, Sauron doesn't need it to win. He wants it back so that he can have his cool meat suit again. But he'll win without it. He'll just, like, exist as an eye, and it'll suck for him, but he'll do it. And that's the real genius of The Lord of the Rings. There are a lot of other fantasy stories that I've read where the bad guy needs this thing to win, and it's kind of like, okay, just drop it in the ocean. They'll never find it. even if you can't actually destroy it.
Unspoken element of dread in that, though, that even if like they did have a cement mixer and they did do that, he's winning without it, and there's this idea that he'll just wait and he'll outlast everything, right? Like, he's not in like a huge rush. He knows that eventually it'll come back to him, right? Like, that's creepy. That's good power in that for that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Plus, there's probably like a kraken or something that would find it.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it.
Yeah. This is a good time to interject this. So the kraken finds it. Can the kraken put it on? Right. Like all these like rings, necklaces, wearable magic items. To like, what's the enchantment that just makes these things resize like for everybody?
Look, as far as I know, the Ring of Power is one size fits all, so, like, I'm pretty sure.
Well, in the movie, the ring, like, we actually see the ring change size.
In that flashback, yeah.
Yeah, in this flashback.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's with Smeagol?
No, that's from Isildur.
No?
What is his name?
Oh, okay.
Aragorn's dad, right?
His
ancestor.
His
ancestor, but
yeah.
I mean, Aragorn's old, but I don't think he's that old.
His name is like Isildur or something. I don't think I'm quite getting it right, but yeah. He cuts it off of Sauron's finger and it resizes to a size. Yeah.
And thanks to The Hobbit, I know that Aragorn's father is named Arathorn. Just throwing that out there.
It's a long line of men with very similar names who have
It's like the evolution of that name. Like, you know, by changing like one letter over several centuries, they eventually went from whatever that guy's original name was to Aragorn. you could trace the name. They only are allowed to change one letter each time.
Speaking of temptation, I have to say, for games wise, I really love the items in Betrayal at House on the Hill.
Oh yeah, those are great.
And it has all sorts of different eclectic items, but like for the most part, they're all double-edged swords. Like, there are some items that just like, okay, while you're wearing it, you get +2 intelligence. Once you take it off, you get -2 intelligence. You know, you basically lose it again. That's fine. But there's all sorts of other things where like all of their items, you know, you have to roll to use them, and if you fail, they might do bad things to you, or, like, the music box that opens and just, like, you have to make a will test to not just stop and doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to the music box for a while. Yeah, yeah.
And one game that was just almost completely paralyzed at the end because of the music box. Like, in the music box, everybody was taking a will roll. I don't know if it really did good things for that game, but you know, having more antagonistic items that are, like, they could be used, and maybe they won't do you any harm, but they're not reliable, and at the same time, you know, there's a cost to them. I feel like we could stand to see more of that.
Yeah, I mean, that would certainly help explain, like, why, for example, like, if there was a cost to using the alethiometer, that would help explain why Lyra can't use it constantly,
mm-hmm.
or a risk in using it. I mean, that wouldn't... I mean, honestly, the alethiometer is just an example of an item that works super well in the first book because Lyra hasn't learned to use it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the later books, it's too powerful. It's, you know, not dissimilar from Neo's power in The Matrix. That's not an item, but it's the same thing, right? Where he's like, it's when he's learning to be the one, it's like, okay, cool, that's neat. And then in the other movies, it's like, he's the one. Should he not just be able to kill everything without even doing kung fu?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's the problem with having the, like, this person can't control their power or doesn't know how to use the item or whatever as your, like, limiting factor on the power of an item. You know, it's really easy to be like, okay, you know, you're not thinking about the sequel right now, but you still might want a sequel.
Hmm.
This is only going to last one story. Because, you know, anything like that, that's a problem. People are going to expect it to be solved at the end of the story as part of a plot arc, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then what do you do next time? I mean, honestly, with the alethiometer, is that what it's pronounced?
Yeah, the alethiometer.
Probably the best thing that could have happened is for it to get broken or something. Just period. And she can't use it for a while.
Yeah. That would have honestly also really helped with her transition to adulthood. But no, instead what happened was we got a new main character. His name is Will, and he's very boring. He has
also
a knife.
Also, by the end of that series, doesn't, like, it's kind of this indication of, like, her skill with the alethiometer is that, like, I don't know, like, fate wills it. Because at the end of events, she, like, loses her innate ability to use it.
Okay, no, it's not quite that bad. No, what it is it's that, in this world, the actual divine force is called dust. God is evil, but dust basically fills the role of God, in that God would do in any other story. And dust is what powers the alethiometer, and children are very open to dust. And that's why Lyra's so good at it. And adults, like, have a much harder time. So, like, the reason she loses her powers or the reason she loses her ability to use it is because she goes through puberty.
Because puberty ruins everything.
It does. Although, I mean, this is one of the few things I actually liked about the end was the idea was when she was like, okay, I don't have that natural ability anymore, but I could still learn to use it if I just studied really hard.
Mm.
And that's, like, what she's planning to do at the end of the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see...
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, the big question is, why didn't that just happen earlier?
Yeah, it's because we needed to add Will to the story, and Lyra needed the alethiometer to literally tell her that she's not the main character anymore.
Aww.
Like, there's a scene in book two where she asks the alethiometer, like, what should I be doing? And the alethiometer is like, you should help Will do his things. And it's like, oh, thanks. Thanks, Pullman. Anyway.
I'll never forget, years ago, before probably like around Harry Potter like 4 when it came out, definitely the first first Golden Compass book or his Dark Materials book. And there's an interview with Philip Pullman where he was like, he was expressing like some serious, like, I don't know if anger is the right word, but he was frustrated that like Harry Potter was getting so much attention for being like satanistic and full of witches and stuff. And he's like, my books are literally about these people trying to kill God. And I'm getting none of the attention.
Why am I not making the Christians mad?
Right?
It's because your books aren't as good, Pullman. That's why. It's because they aren't as popular. Yeah. Believe me, if your books were as popular as Harry Potter, more people would be burning them.
Oh, jeez.
That is pretty funny.
I guess if you're writing a story or like running a game too, sometimes just embracing random magic things is fun. I'm probably more in games. I was trying to think of my like favorite random magical items that like I've had in like role-playing games and stuff. And so my current favorite, and this is just kind of like what we enjoy to do, we like rolling on random magical loot tables. And so
that's fun.
Quite fun. And so the one that we have, we're in the Underdark, by the way, right? This is fifth edition Underdark, and we have an alchemy jug. And if you're not familiar with what that thing does, is it can make like one of, I think, about seven different like liquid substances. And it will make certain quantities of them. So we can have several gallons of mayonnaise anytime we want. But so, very handy. It's just like, should we keep lugging this around? I mean, I guess we can drink the beer and eat the mayonnaise. But I was like, man, like that is not what we need right now to survive the monsters in the Underdark.
Is it random? Does it randomly produce?
It has like dials. Like push in the right like peg for like mayonnaise. It's just, I mean, it's just too funny. Like that's probably why it so much.
Oh, I mean, there are absolutely like, okay, so in RPG terms, I absolutely love getting like random finicky magic items that like would probably not fit in a prose story. Like I like getting the deck of many things. It's just a deck of cards and you draw it and weird stuff comes out and it's like, it's really cool to get these at low level, because at low level, like, the helpful abilities are actually pretty powerful, and then, like, there are the ones that are just weird, like this one. Oops, I summoned a badger. Sorry, guys. Like, I wanted to get one of the better abilities. And then there are other ones, like, in D&D specifically, like, those tokens that you can get, that, like, this token turns into a 50-foot tree. This one turns into a boat. it's like, you know, they're like fun little tokens that are really cool in the early game, back when you're like a low level loser and have no useful powers. Once you get into like mid and, you know, God forbid high level, those items like become a waste of time, because it's like you're not going to get anything out of the deck of many things that is going to be better than what you could just do with your action. And who cares about making a tree? It really doesn't matter. But you know, there are like some really fun magic items in D&D. My favorite is the crab monster. It's like a crab golem that you pilot.
Yes, it's like a barrel type thing that you crawl in and then start manipulating the levers, right?
Yeah. And it's, you get into it's pretty worthless like at anything other than the lowest levels. But it's fun. You have a crab robot. That's neat. And you also get into weird arguments about whether or not druids can use it. Because, like, druids won't use metal armor. Is this armor? It feels kind of like armor. But I don't know. You get into, like, a weird, like, druid crisis of faith. That's fun.
If you could have a magic item, what would you take? I mean, we're talking real life here, and there's a lot of choices.
There's so many good ones.
I would offer up probably, I was thinking about this a lot, and I continue to think about it. But my answer for right now in this moment is one that I've often come back to, is probably just to have a bag of holding. I mean,
bags of holding are really tempting to, you know, absolutely. I'm actually a big fan of the portable hole, because it's like a bag of holding, but with more utility.
Makes sense too, yeah.
I really like the portable hole. Like, it's one of my favorites because it lets you, like, the portable hole gives you, like, a certain amount of freedom in your dungeon delving experience that you don't have before you get one. Because it's like, no longer do you have to follow this corridor until you get to the end. You can be like, no, I would rather go over to the next corridor, and you just put the portable hole on the wall, and then you just walk through it.
Wait, is it supposed to be for, like, real life usage?
Yeah, but Orin, I want one in real life. But I mean, we all know that Orin frequents dungeons. Like, this is just what he does.
Do you need to break into some buildings, Orin? Is there something I should know?
Well, I'm not going to incriminate myself on this podcast, obviously. But
I might go with the Ring of Invincibility from Buffy and Angel. It's a ring you.
Oh, right. The, Yeah, the Gem of Amara isn't the, or is that the one that's specifically for vampires?
Is it specifically for vampires? I assume it worked on humans, I mean, it's the too, one... but maybe I'm wrong.
Is it the one that Angel breaks because the writers couldn't figure out another reason to get rid of it because they couldn't have
it was
OP. That's the Gem of Amara. I don't really remember if it makes humans invincible too. I know what makes I can't remember if it makes you invincible or if it just makes vampires immune to the things that kill vampires. Mm-hmm. I'm a little unclear on that part. Mm-hmm. But I mean, having a ring of invincibility sounds cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that'd be nice. Yeah.
That's a good one.
I mean, obviously, we all want the Ring of Power. We've already established that. I would like to be able to go to the danger zone, please.
So, question for you guys. What do you think of stories where it's supposedly a magic item doing something, and at the end they're like, no, it was never the item. It was you all along.
Secret was inside you.
I mean, I think it probably is based on the implementation, and I was thinking of like examples of this, and I feel like Dorothy's shoes, do they actually do anything? The ruby slippers, I feel like it was an inside-you-all-along device.
But wasn't like, I mean, wasn't it kind of a question about whether or not any of that ever happened, and she was just kind of unconscious?
Okay. Well, she goes back, so clearly she does go back. It did happen, but within the confines of Oz. My reading was that the slippers can take her home, but the reason the witch doesn't tell her is because the witch wants to use her to eliminate her political rivals, right? That's the best read I can get on that.
I mean, maybe in the books there's more clarity, right? Because they're based on books, but the books, from what I know, are kind of like, they have a lot of material and they're kind of disorganized. But... Yeah. At least in the movie, they make a big deal out of the fact that Dorothy has these shoes because the Wicked Witch of the West wants them, and Dorothy has them instead, right? But then, like, she doesn't use them for anything but like getting home. And when she gets home, I don't know. It feels like it's her mental focus that's doing it, not really the shoes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Hard to say. But speaking of getting home, we are just about out of time. So we will leave this argument to the comments. Please comment if you think that those shoes are actually magic, or if Dorothy could have gotten home the whole time and she just didn't know the magic was inside her all along. I will always subscribe to the Witch of the North being an evil mastermind theory, but, you know, we'll never know. Otherwise, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
If you like what we do, send a few dollars our way through our Patreon. Every cent goes into the hoard of gold we lounge on like dragons. Just go to patreon.com/mythcrants. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Colton.